You're listening to KVNF's special election coverage. I'm Ariana Brocious. Sal Pace is a Democratic state House representative from Pueblo, challenging Republican incumbent Scott Tipton for Colorado's competitive 3rd Congressional District. Pace sat down with KVNF on a visit through the 3rd Congressional District a few weeks ago to discuss his campaign platform and key issues. Hi, Sal.
Hi, Ariana.
Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me in your fine studio.
What would you consider to be your fundamental issue base or the key issues that are driving you to run for Congress?
Well, I think the biggest issue we're dealing with is fighting the gridlock, the partisanship, the 10-second soundbites in Washington, and that there are too many folks in Washington who are just trying to win re-election instead of actually trying to solve problems. And my focus is trying to bring people together, find common ground, work together, and solve problems regardless of party.
Do you have any issues in particular that are sort of driving you, key policies or things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I have three little kids, and sort of from a philosophical standpoint, I want to make sure that we leave a society, a country that's better for them than the one that we've inherited, that every generation it gets better. I fear that's not always going to be the case. I know so many folks who've faced foreclosure, bankruptcy, or have lost their homes because of this tough economy. And in my own family, my Aunt Camille, a year ago, she had a stroke, and because of her medical bills, she lost everything she ever worked for. She lost everything in her bank account, her home, and in March, she lost her life. She passed away in poverty, and this is not the promise that this country is founded on, a promise that if you work hard, you play by the rules, you can retire in dignity. Yet we see an attack on Medicare, a plan to turn it into a voucher system, a handout to insurance companies. But how many senior citizens have pre-existing conditions, and when they have the opportunity to go and buy private insurance on the open marketplace, what is that going to cost? It's a matter of values, it's a matter of principles, and I want to fight for a society that's fair and just.
Well, speaking to health care, what is your stance on the Affordable Care Act, and do you support repealing it?
No, absolutely not. There's some really good parts of the Affordable Care Act, the pre-existing condition prohibition, the ability to allow college students to stay on their parents' health care plans, eliminating the prescription drug donut hole for senior citizens. You know, the Affordable Care Act isn't perfect. I don't like everything in it. I think there's concerns with the mandate where we're requiring people to buy private insurance from a private provider in some rural parts of America and rural parts of Colorado. Sometimes it's hard to find a couple insurance providers or one or two insurance providers who can provide the service on the individual level at an affordable rate. We're essentially mandating a monopoly here. I think there are other ways to get at the same goal. The goal is to spread the risk amongst a lot of people and over a lot of time, and encourage folks who are low risk to join the pool. We can do that, I think, with tax incentives. I think we can better provide opportunities for small businesses to provide health insurance at an affordable rate to their employees. But the fundamental question is how we work together to get this done, because there's a lot that we agree on. There's some that we don't, some parts of the Affordable Care Act we don't agree on. And at the end of the day, what's going to work is when people actually sit down together, Republicans, Democrats, they look each other in the eye, you treat each other with respect, and you figure out how to compromise and get something done. 33 repeal votes in this last Congress is not that path. We had a debate, myself and Congressman Tipton, the current congressman, couple weeks ago, and I said, when did you expect a different result? After vote 15, 20, 25? You know, it's clear they didn't expect a different result in the House. They were just simply trying to score partisan political points to make one side look good and one side look bad. That's exactly the wrong way to approach the real issues with healthcare.
There's been a national conversation going on over, well, really a national debate over women's reproductive rights and how those should be legislated or not. I'd like to ask your opinion on that debate and your stance. Do you generally support pro-life or pro-choice legislation?
My philosophy is government should stay out of religion and religion should stay out of government.
And speaking to women's issues?
And absolutely. I think these are choices that are left between a woman, her doctor, and her God.
You touched on this before, that you are very opposed to the idea of privatizing Social Security and Medicaid. Can you expand on that just a little?
Yeah, I mean, from a personal perspective, and we all have stories like these. My father had a heart attack last year. I was in the hospital when he's being revived by a doctor pounding on his chest. He's now on his third pacemaker. He's got a bag of prescription drugs that I can't keep track of that he has to take. He's a retired mechanic. He lives on Social Security, and the only reason he's around is because of Medicare. There are attempts to privatize it and turn it into a voucher system, require people to go and purchase private insurance on the open marketplace. I can't imagine a private insurance provider that would provide affordable insurance to my father. The $500 voucher isn't going to get him much, and he'd have to spend every last dime on a Social Security check to get the same type of care he's getting today. You know, we hear a lot about winners and losers. We hear how Todd Akin's statement affects Democrats or Republicans, how the Affordable Care Act ruling in the Supreme Court affects the election, and how Paul Ryan's addition to the ticket, who it helps, Democrats or Republicans. But at the end of the day, it's not about whether or not Democrats or Republicans are winning. It's about real people. And there's a lot of real people out there with the same experience that my dad had. And we're not going to be providing the type of service that they deserve, that they've paid into after a lifetime of hard work, if we're requiring them to ditch a Medicare plan that they've depended on their entire lives in order to go and buy private insurance. This is fundamental to my principles, and it's a stark contrast between me and the guys currently in office.
Changing subject just a little, there's been a recent push by some members of Congress to defund public media, most notably the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And as you may know, that funding is pretty critical to stations like KVNF, public radio stations, public TV stations. And so I'm curious what your position is on that funding and whether you would, if elected, vote to continue it or defund it.
Well, I think we have to fund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You know, this is an area where myself and our current congressman disagree. He voted for and strongly defended his vote to defund Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You know, obviously he thinks that Big Bird is some sort of threat to our country. You know, these aren't the priorities of the Western Slope, or these aren't the priorities of the North Fork. It just seems at times that we don't have a voice in Washington, and you know, it's time for people like you and me to have a voice in Washington again.
And is public media part of that?
Absolutely, yeah. Public media plays an important, critical role, and we have to continue to fund it. We have a representative democracy. It's founded in the concept that we're going to have a well-informed populace. That is what public media does, and it plays a critical role to ensuring that we have a functioning democracy for now and into the future.
Your website says that government can help create a climate for growth. If elected, what are some of your plans specifically to bolster the economy and improve the job market here in the 3rd Congressional District in Western Colorado? Maybe specific policies or pieces of legislation that you have in mind?
Yeah, there's so much that can be done to grow the economy. And if you walk around Ouray or Hotchkiss or Paonia and you're talking to folks, you're going to hear a lot of common ground. You're going to hear Democrats and Republicans and independents agree on a whole host of issues. People agree that we need to support small businesses, provide tax breaks when they're creating jobs. People agree that we need to help find investment capital for small businesses who've found it really tough for the last 3 or 4 years to get loans from creditors. People agree that it makes sense to have strong rural infrastructure. Who would not want to live in this valley if there's reliable broadband and access to rural aviation, and you have a location-neutral job where you can work at home from the internet and travel by plane to Denver and around the world in a matter of hours? People agree that we have to have good workforce development. We have 2.5 million job postings in America today that aren't being met because we're not meshing the right workforce development training with available jobs. People agree that we have to have strong and innovative schools because if we want to compete in a 21st century economy, we have to have the best schools. I mean, I can go on and on and on about what people agree on. These are things I believe in, but it's not happening. Not because people don't agree on it. People do agree on these issues. It's not happening because in Washington, they're more concerned with attacking each other, scoring political points, instead of getting anything done. We're waiting on a farm bill. We're waiting on a transportation bill. The credit rating of the U.S. has been downgraded for no other reason than partisan bickering back in Washington. We can solve a lot of our economic woes in this country, starting with people actually sitting down and working together.
Well, along those lines, do you support federal spending as a means of promoting economic growth?
There's people on both sides of me, both to the left and the right, who don't believe that government has a role in creating jobs. I believe that government does have a role in helping to spur on the economy. In Pueblo, Colorado, in the district that I represent in the State House, we have the largest wind tower manufacturing plant in the world. We helped the industry grow by passing a renewable energy standard. We increased it from 20 to 30% in Colorado. And even before that bill was signed into law by Governor Ritter a few years ago, Xcel Energy announced they were purchasing 139 wind turbines from Vestas. And even before Vestas started that order, they announced they're hiring 1,000 new employees. This is government playing a role in helping to spur on economic development. Today, there's a wind production tax credit that is only paid out, or this tax credit is only available when there's actually energy being produced. It's not a handout in advance. It's only based on how much is produced. And right now, production tax credit is slated to disappear December 31st. And Vestas has laid off hundreds of employees across Colorado because the market has shut down because of a broken and ineffective Congress. These are programs that work, that make sense, that are based on spurring on economic development. And there are people on both sides, to the left and the right, who don't believe that government should be involved in this. But I think government does have a role in spurring on economic growth.
On a state level, Colorado has continued to review and update its oil and gas regulations, including the recent requirement for disclosure of fluids used in hydraulic fracturing. Do you support reducing regulations on the energy industry?
I think it makes sense to have reporting of fluids and fracking, not only after the fact, but prior to, especially on our public lands. It makes sense to have transparency. And if there's any risk to public health, then having it publicly transparent and for everyone to know what's in the fluids makes sense. Energy is a real critical issue for Colorado's 3rd District. We have all sorts of energy development in this district and a lot of existing industries. We have hiking and fishing and rafting and hunting and skiing and tourism, and as well as agriculture. And here in this valley, a lot of organic agriculture. We all can coexist. We can respect each other, but it's about balance. And if we have a balanced approach and we respect the land and the water and the air, and we reward those actors who do it in the right manner in the energy field, and we penalize those who cut corners and break the rules and threaten our land and our air, then we can have the right balance. If we respect each other and respect our land, we can all coexist. I think it's a false choice that it's one or the other, but we still have to have regulations that penalize those who cut corners.
Well, and speaking to regulations, some environmentalists often cite oil and gas as one of the least regulated energy industries compared with others, perhaps like coal. And there have been some efforts in Congress to change some of the regulations around the industry, for example, not letting natural gas be exempt from the Clean Water Act. Is that something that you would support and push for as a representative for this district in Congress?
Yeah, I think what we have to do is what we've done in Colorado and bring everyone to the table and do it in a collaborative fashion. The energy industry, the natural gas industry, did not fight the transparency in fracking fluids in Colorado because we all worked together. And we had conservationists and we had the energy industry and the governor helping to shepherd it along. We can get that done at the federal level as well. If we're all willing to sit down and work together, that's how policy is best made in this country.
Earlier this year, the Colorado State Legislature came pretty close to passing a measure that would allow civil unions in the state. Do you support same-sex marriage or civil unions and or? And is that legislation that you would support on a federal level?
I was ready to support the civil unions bill. I think it makes sense to treat everyone equally regardless of their sexual orientation. It's wrong that we would treat people differently because of who they love in this country. I have a cousin who is serving. He's been in the Navy now for over 20 years and had to keep his sexual orientation secret. For no good reason. He's an officer and has done an outstanding job, and I think it goes against our core American principles of judging people by their actions. These are my values. I'm sad that the civil unions bill went the path that it went at the legislature.
And would you support those efforts on a federal level?
Yeah, absolutely.
So earlier this year, you voted in favor of House Bill 1205, which authorized concealed carry of a firearm without a permit here in the state legislature. In the wake of the recent shooting in Aurora, what is your stance on gun control, and is there anything in that regard that you would want to take to the federal level if elected?
You know, clearly the guy who committed this awful tragedy in Aurora was a madman. He was hell-bent on hurting people. My heart, my sympathy goes out to the victims, to the family of the victims. No one deserves to die senselessly. The fact that he booby-trapped his home with bombs, ready to kill more people even after the terrible acts in that theater, goes to show that he was absolutely committed on doing harm, no matter what tools he used. his actions are not reflective of the thousands of responsible gun owners and sportsmen, especially here in Colorado's 3rd Congressional District. And I don't think now's the time to be, in the wake of this tragedy, I don't think now's the time to be considering limiting our Second Amendment rights and putting restrictions on constitutionally guaranteed rights. Let's take a breath. Let's have a little time to view this after we get all the facts, after we get all the details. We certainly have to look at mental health. Clearly, this man and a number of the folks who commit heinous crimes have severe mental health issues. We have to figure out how to better properly diagnose it and treat it, and ensure that those folks who are diagnosed as having severe mental health issues get their hands on tools to cause harm.
So much of the 3rd Congressional District is rural. What do you consider to be some of the unique challenges of the rural parts of the country? And if you are elected, what would you prioritize in terms of legislation to help those parts of the country, especially here in your district?
Well, I think the rural parts of Colorado are the most beautiful parts. It's a diverse district from the Arkansas Valley to the San Luis Valley, western slope from the Utah border to Wyoming to New Mexico border. And there's a lot that we have in common. We have thriving agriculture from chilies in Pueblo to peaches in Peonia. We have to protect our rural agriculture. I'm proud of legislation that I passed and sponsored in the Colorado State House to eliminate Colorado's estate tax for farmers and ranchers if we want to keep people on the land for multiple generations. We need to get rid of the current system, which, if you're land rich and cash poor, forces you to subdivide your land in order to often pay off the taxes for the next generation. Water is a critical issue in all parts of rural Colorado. I'm proud of the work I've done in the legislature to keep water on the land and make it more difficult for urban areas to transfer water out of rural Colorado. I don't think our vision as a state is one where we have a big oasis around Denver and the rest of the state is dry. I don't think that's the right path or course of action. We have to protect water for future generations. Obviously, public lands are critical in Colorado's 3rd District. 28 of the 29 counties have public lands, and they've helped spur on a vibrant recreation and tourism-based economy right here in Colorado. These are the values that I think we need to protect today and tomorrow and long into the future for our next generation.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Ariana.
You've been listening to KVNF's special election coverage, an interview with Sal Pace, Democratic candidate for Colorado's 3rd Congressional District. KVNF has reached out to incumbent Representative Scott Tipton numerous times, but he has declined repeated requests for an interview. Tune in next Wednesday at 3 p.m. to hear a debate between Tipton, Pace, and independent candidate Tisha Cassida. Thanks for listening.